Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. We're going to talk about some meetings that were had in the winter that had something to do with baseball out there in lovely San Diego. So with us for the baseball podcast is Bally Senior MLB writer David Brown. David, how are you?
Hi, Andy. I'm doing great. I hope you're doing well, too.
I've never been better. So the winter meetings have come and gone. They were eventful. Aaron Judge re-signed with the Yankees, and Arson Judge signed with the Giants.
We're not sure what Stanton's going to do. That was another flub. He called him Stanton once.
He did? John Heyman?
Nightingale did.
Oh, wow. That seems about right. John Heyman also said that Coke Hamill wants to come back to pitch. It's like, John, slow down. Really. Just right. Maybe read the tweet. I mean, it's annoying when Heyman breaks news for me because I can't read his tweets. So I have to go to my burner Twitter account to see what he wrote. And it's for the most innocent reason that he banned me. It's not my fault. You might remember this. So if you've got kids in the car, earmuffs for just a second. He tweeted about a big home run by, why am I blanking on the Jones, the former Orioles
Andrew?
Center fielder.
Oh, Andy. Andy.
That's exactly what I thought, too. It's not Alex Jones. That's a different kind of thing. Anyway, it'll come to us.
Is it Jones? Adam.
Adam Jones. Hit a home run. John got excited. Went to use the hashtag Big Hits. And spelled it BIGTITS. So I screen grabbed it. And I would occasionally tweet it at him. Just for fun. And then one day he decided that was enough of me.
He's had enough.
Yes. But he has a history of tweeting a little fast. And yes, it was like two nights before it actually happened. He reported that Arson Judge was going to sign with the Giants.
Well, he could even left that up because he said the words that he used were like, it appears that Aaron Judge is going to San Francisco. I mean, he couched it a little bit. He could have, people have
yeah.
said
he
more
deleted
wrong
it
things.
Because of the arson part. Which actually was just funny.
That's too bad because that's a classic moment.
Just lean into it.
Right. Which sometimes he does, I think.
Okay, so locally, at least for me, there were three moves that directly impacted Cubs and Cubs fans. The first of which was the Cubs signed a guy with a great resume. MVP, Rookie of the Year, Gold Glove, Silver Slugger, two All-Stars.
But
the last 2 years, he's been one of the worst players in all of baseball. And, so it's Cordy Bellinger, if I narrow it down for you guys. And they signed him to a one-year deal, which I found very puzzling.
Right.
So Scott Boras is the rhyming agent for Cody. Honestly, now you've been around Scott Boras. You told us this. With the really bad puns, does he think they're funny just because sports writers nervously laugh at them? Is that just encourages him to go with the weird? Or is he just, he knows they're not funny. He doesn't care. He's a billionaire, and he'll just say whatever he wants.
That's a really good question, Andy.
Or maybe a little of both.
I think the answer is mostly that he thinks they're funny. Yeah, but he also is maybe ashamed of it. You know, he thinks it's funny. That's how I think of puns. I get, you know, I like to pun, but I also roll my eyes when other people do it because I didn't do it. And, you know, there's that common whatever that's like the lowest form of comedy. So, which I don't necessarily believe, but that's what some people believe. So I think it's I would say it's mostly that he really does think they're funny.
Yeah.
And but maybe 10% realizes that that's kind of hackneyed.
What would happen if he did that and sport and all the sports writers just started booing him?
Well, that would be funny too. I always take it like that's a funny boo anyway, so that would not discourage me from doing more puns.
Yeah, he'd be up there going, "All right, bring it on! I love it.
Right,
more."
Right.
Okay. So anyway, the Scott wanted a 1-year deal for Cody. The feeling was that he feels, and apparently the Cubs agreed. The serious shoulder injury that Cody suffered, which he then, is this the timeline right? Then he then exacerbated it, or he re-injured it by hitting a home run in game one of the World Series and doing the weirdest, like, forearm high five of all
very
time.
Very forceful.
And then standing in the outfield and going and giving the "my shoulder exploded" pantomime to everybody else. It's like, great.
I think that's vaguely the timeline, yes. I think there's something wrong with his shoulder that precedes all of this. I'm sort of unclear about that. I'm unclear about exactly how much the forearm bash hurt or exacerbated. It's just and also that timeline doesn't completely 100% line up with, like, you know, he was kind of having a down season before that.
Yeah.
So compared to his MVP times. So
yeah, he was great his first 3 years. 19, he won the MVP.
Yeah.
20, he struggled, but then he seemed to get it. It was the weird pandemic here too, so nobody really like.
Right.
Then he seemed to get it together, and played pretty well in the playoffs until he blowed up his arm, and then he did nothing for the rest of the World Series. Then he shows up for camp in 21, I believe, after having the surgery. And he breaks his leg. So he played all of 21 rehabbing a bad shoulder and breaking his leg. So then the Dodgers are like, all right, 22, he's going to be great. And he was so bad in 21. I think that was the year he had the OPS plus of 48.
Yeah, that's about right. It's just an amazingly pathetic season.
And then last year he was like 77.
Yeah.
So not
something like
not good.
20% worse than the league rather than 60.
So if you're the Cubs and you're like, all right, well, this is a guy who's only, 27 years old. This is a guy to take a chance on. The dumbest thing you can do is agree to sign that guy for 1 year. Right. Because either he doesn't get it together and he's bad, or if you're confident you're going to get something out of him, turn him around, he has a good year, and then he leaves.
It's not even one of those player opt-out deals.
So there's apparently a mutual option that the Cubs have to pay $5.5 million to get out of. So, and that was just for AAV purposes, right? It's $12 million in 23, and then it's $5.5 million. That's the buyout in 24.
Right.
So he's getting $17.5 million. He's just, you know, he's a little of it's deferred because, you know, Cubs, how could they possibly afford to pay all that at once? So it's just odd to me. It's basically like what you're saying is we know we can get this guy back on track and then he can go shop himself and make a lot of money somewhere else.
You're welcome.
Yep. Because we know we were one center fielder away from the World Series next year. So we get Cody, we win the World Series, and everybody's happy. It's like, and honestly, if the whole idea is, well, we can't block Pete Crow Armstrong, so we don't want to sign him for more than a year. It's like, I'll just stop it. Shut up. Last I checked, there's 3 outfield spots, and he can play first base. There's no reason for that deal to only be – basically, if Scott said it can only be a year, it's like, all right, well, good luck. Go find some other sucker.
Right.
But the Cubs are like, no, we'd like to be the sucker. Please, let us be the sucker.
Yeah, I don't know, other than coming out of nowhere and winning it all this year, I don't know what's in it for the Cubs exactly.
So it seems to me that the best outcome for the Cubs would be that he's just kind of okay.
Right.
And then they're like, you know what, Cody, you liked it here. Look, you're getting better. I think maybe we ought to give you, how about a 3-year deal next? And he's like, okay, sure, I'll take the money. Because if he's really bad, you don't want to keep him. And if he's really good, he doesn't want to stay. And it's just...
That's quite a needle they're trying to thread there.
But they got a lot of credit for that. A lot of people slapping them on the back for, oh, this is a great move. Oh, geez, you guys, that's genius. It's like, I'll think about it for more than 5 minutes, and it's not so genius. Their other signing was former number two overall pick, Jameson Taillon. Do you remember who he was drafted in between?
I don't.
I would think two Hall of Famers. Bryce Harper. He got picked after Bryce Harper and right before Manny Machado.
Wow. Yeah. The Pirates, I tell you, they know how to pick him. I mean, he's been good, but obviously not like that.
Yeah.
But signable, I would imagine that's probably the first adjective that they used for him.
Yes.
Oh, we can sign him.
Yep. And he's, I honestly, I think that's a pretty good signing. $17 million a year. It's below the qualifying offer for a guy who pitched well for the Yankees, has pitched well when healthy, although that's never happened. caught Tommy John disease twice. Had to go through cancer treatments at one point. But
that's quite a lot.
All that's behind him, maybe. I would take a third Tommy John disease, and you're probably just packing it in.
Well, who was the left-handed pitcher who had, like, five of them? There was somebody for the Braves. I slipped in my mind, but it's rare.
Yeah.
So
he's probably, on a good team, he's probably, what, your number three starter?
Yes.
But he's on the
on
Cubs.
A great team, number four. But a good team, three, yes.
But he's on the Cubs, and he's basically the co-ace with Marcus Stroman.
Right.
And that's all they did. And people are like, oh, look at the Cubs. Look at they're spending all this money. It's like, whoa, are they? They increased their payroll for next year by $29 million.
Well, I think they're just juxtaposing them against the White Sox. I think yes, anybody looks very spendy against them. Next to them and same team or same town, so maybe that's where they're getting the context.
Did the White Sox go to the winter meetings? Maybe they just forgot. Maybe they're flying to San Diego this week, you know, next week. Where is everybody?
Oh, I think we did it again. I think we missed it.
That was when? No wonder the rooms were so cheap.
Right.
Now they got all they got their shopping done early with Mike Clevinger.
Right. Beating the door. That was a door buster. Mike Clevinger.
Yeah, they use their Kohl's cash. We got Jerry, we'd like to sign him early. We got a coupon. All right. How long?
Make sure he cuts his hair. Oh, I don't know about that.
It's 1 year, but really it's more like 9 months. Okay. That's fine. Keep the receipt though. The other Cub-related news was their three-time All-Star catcher. Wilson Contreras did the most obvious thing ever. The thing we've been, Cub fans have been watching coming down the pike for months. He is replacing the great Yadier Molina with the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cubs, who could never, ever sign him for more than a year, ever. And basically didn't even bother to try and negotiate any kind of contract with him for the last 2 years. Watched him go to their arch rivals.
I get it.
Yep. Boris, and they're like, we'll give him 5 years. You think Jed's like, wait a minute, what, really? Five? Do we think he might be good? Too late now.
What do they know that we don't?
Well, everything, basically. Everybody knows everything that the Cubs don't. The Cubs just seemed hell-bent to move on from Wilson. I think part of it is I don't think he's ever had a terribly good relationship with David Ross. They were teammates for a year. And I wrote about this. I really think this is a thing. I think that the vaunted Cubs pitch lab guys have been trying to they try to pin failures on anybody but them. And I think a lot of it was, well, we come up with these great game plans and Wilson can't follow them. And, oh, my God, look at all the strikes he steals. Oh, God. Where do we get a real catcher? Well, they're going to find out what life is like with P.J. Higgins and Yan Gomes. That'll be fun. What does it say to you as an astute baseball observer when the Cardinals, the team that for years, two decades, valued defense behind the plate, says, we don't have a problem with that. We'll give them 5 years.
Well, I know that Sean Murphy was on the on their list, and because obviously if you're the A's, well, we're not going to be able to afford Sean Murphy in 3 years or whatever it is when he gets free agency. It's like, why do you even have a baseball team? I mean, it's anyway.
Well, they got to create. Don't they have to clear room for the great Shane Langoliers?
Right. One of my favorite Stephen King novels, yep. The Langoliers. I mean, that's true. I'm not sure. I didn't see what. I know he was a good prospect with the Braves. I don't know if he's ready to be good in the major leagues or not. But, as it turns out, I don't remember exactly what it was reportedly, but Derek Gould in the St. Louis paper had a thing about how the A's wanted, great return players for Murphy. And
they wanted a Newt Bar, among other
things. Right, they wanted Newt Bar. And guys who are part of their young side core, not the main core, but the good supplemental players. They want a Newt Bar or, Nolan Gorman or whatever, two out of those three guys. And so that's why the Cardinals turn to the free agent dude. So, yeah, he's a different – Murphy's a better defensive player. You talked about the pitch lab guys blaming Wilson for things. His framing numbers weren't particularly good.
No.
I don't know how he is with handling a pitching staff, and I don't know how that is measured or how valuable it is or what.
Well, so Matt Clapp looked up some numbers and saw that several of the Cubs starters pitched better last year with Yan Gomes catching than they did with Wilson. Like, it wasn't like Marcus Stroman was basically level. It didn't matter who caught him. Like, it was a marked difference. Justin Steele was much better with Gomes. Hendricks was a lot better with Gomes. But at the end of the year, the catcher ERA difference between Gomes and Wilson was like a tenth of a point.
Right.
So you have there's no context when you just have the two numbers. Like, Hendricks only had a few good starts. He was only really healthy for a few starts. If those just happen to be Yan Gomes starts, he's going to have a better catcher ERA.
I guess. Yeah, that's one of those. The catcher ERA thing is interesting, but like you were just implying, there's more context to it than, it's a matter of timing, who's healthy, who you're playing, luck. So there's all kinds of factors that go into that. Before I forget, it's funny. I was looking up, Yadier Molina, for all of his credit that he got defensively, was not a very good pitch framer until, like his best pitch framing year was this year, this past year. Like, he finally learned how to do it. And he was okay. He was better the last couple years before. And this year, he's, ninth in the league in pitch framing. It is something that can be taught. And isn't necessarily something that's easy to pick up.
Yeah.
So we're getting back to the pitch lab guys. I mean, I would put as much blame on the inability of the Cubs to teach Wilson pitch framing as him not learning it. So
they almost wondered. They're in there like, so who taught the? Where'd we get him from? Who taught him how to catch? We did. Oh, well, that's the problem.
Right.
Why would we have? Why would we want a catcher that we taught? Go get somebody else's. Somebody already knows what they're doing. I wonder, were Yadi's pitch framing numbers hampered by the fact that he could set up 8 feet into the Did the other band still get a strike called?
The Tom Glavin of catchers.
The guy doing the framing is like, no, I'm not giving him credit for that. That was ridiculous. No.
It's amazing that the there's a correlation between how much time Yachty missed for basketball games with how good his pitch framing got. So
maybe that's what he's really doing. I'm going to finally learn how to do this. But I'm going to need a cover story. It's embarrassing to be 45 years old and finally learn how to do this. You know what? The basketball team's got a game this week. I'll just pretend I'm going there. You know what? I better wear a uniform on the bench as the owner and make sure all the TV cameras find me so I can really sell this. Good job, Yachty. You know, part of me feels good for Wilson. I've always liked him. I'm glad he cashed in. I'm sure there's going to be some satisfaction to the fact that he can, you know, give a big F you to the Ricketts, that not only did he get his money, but now he's playing for the, you know, their biggest competitor. But he's got to live in St. Louis. And honestly, I think it's going to be miserable to be the guy who replaces Yachty. With that fan base and the every time a Cardinal gets a hit, Yachty wouldn't have called that pitch. Stupid Cub. He's trying to sabotage us from the inside. And it's, I mean, I know John Lester apparently talked to the Cardinals. Former Cardinal John Lester.
Yeah.
Spent a month and a half there at the end of his career. And basically said he was my personal catcher when Ross retired, and he did a good job. So all this defensive liability crap is, you know, don't worry about it.
Right.
But I kind of wonder if Wilson, maybe you should have called Dexter. Ask Dexter Fowler how he enjoyed his time in St. Louis. Because he didn't.
No, he didn't. He sure didn't.
And he was replacing Randall Grichuk, who was actually still there. Fans could still wax nostalgia. There's Randall. Well, there he is. But not Yachty.
I don't... Now, you know, you were making fun of the Cubs. People were talking about how they were spending money, and you're like, well, they haven't really spent that much yet. If they go on to spend, you know, the winter meetings are over, but free agents are still checking in. If they go on to spend more money, why didn't they just decide, you know what? Our approach with Wilson was bad. Do you think they could have, like, repaired that relationship with a big check?
Yes. They didn't want to. They wanted him gone. They thought they had him traded. They thought they had him traded to the Astros, and Dusty said, no, dude, I don't want that dude. And and then they were on trade deadline day. They were all excited, because he was the best bat, except for Juan Soto. And then the Juan Soto thing sucked all the air out of everything.
I guess, yeah.
And they just got left there with, well, fine, we'll take the draft pick. And now I'm sure they're like, not only do we get the draft pick, but the Cardinals lose one, and the Cardinals lose $500,000 of international pool money. Look what a huge win this was for us. I would rather you had a player, and actually I would have really liked if you just kept him. He's 30 years old, and you're like, well, that's starting to get up there for a catcher. But he didn't start catching until he was like 24.
Right.
You know, it's not like they tried to sign him and couldn't. They literally never tried to sign him. They never talked about a long-term contract with him, ever. So they clearly have wanted to move on, and now they get to do it. And their plan B, you know, you talk about the Cardinals not wanting to pay what the A's wanted for Sean Murphy. He's their plan B, too. And they don't even have... Even if they wanted to, they can't...
Right.
They don't have the prospects. And I know there's people like, oh, no, the Cubs have a great farm system. I say, well, the Cubs have... They have a deep farm system. That doesn't mean they have any real top-end talent. And for all the angst about, oh, God, how are we going to protect all these guys that are Rule 5 eligible?
Right.
They lost one guy. Who's not likely to stick with the Mariners. They're probably going to get him back. Meanwhile, the Pirates in the big and the Cubs lost three total between the Major League and the Minor League one. The Pirates lost 11 guys.
What, did the Giants lose a team too? a team's worth of guys, maybe in the minor league side.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So if the, if your thought is, we'll just get Murphy, it's like, all right, what are you going to give up?
Right.
You know, you don't have a Newt Bar.
He's got a funny name, but, I mean, he's going to go into the season as, like, the everyday center fielder or right fielder or something, so.
Yeah, funny name. There's way too many A's and...
You never know where they are, where the double A is. Is it two A's in Lars? Who knows?
But he was—he had a really good second half, and then I think it was—what's it called? Brendan Donovan.
Yeah,
that's—that was the other guy they wanted, and then there was a minor leaguer that they wanted.
Right.
And so I was sitting here like, all right, well, so who are they going to ask for from the Cubs? It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, Christopher Morel does not strike me as a as an A's kind of player.
Right.
And then what? So I don't know what you're gonna. And then he can call up the Blue Jays and go, hey, you got three catchers. You can only use one at a time. So you know things are bad when the Cubs are whispering in the ears of the writers. You know who's actually pretty good? Tucker Barnhart. Like, no, he's not. And you guys know that because he was a Red, and he was bad. He had, like, one half of a good year. So if I had to bet, that's what I would bet. Is that the Cubs catching tandem next year is 58-year-old Yan Gomes and fucker Barnyard. I mean, Tucker Barnhart.
He'll be a good Taylor McGregor interview, though. He's got a lively disposition, and he's a good talker.
Well, good. Maybe they can mic him up
right
during games. We can hear all. It'll be fun. Two of the four shortstops have homes. Trey Turner turned down a lot of money from the Padres. Basically, I'm sure he told AJ, you already traded me once.
Right.
I don't want to come here. To go play for the Phillies. And then the Padres were like, won't somebody take our money? They tried to give $400 million of it to Aaron Judge. And he said, no, I'm going to stay a Yankee. And so then they gave it to Xander Bogaerts. And everybody's like, well, Xander could just move to third someday. And Manny Machado's over. Well, I'm standing right here.
Yeah, I already moved from short to third. Thank you.
And I was crushed because I had read the Mark Feinsand tweet where the Cubs, people are saying maybe the Cubs could sign two of the shortstops. And I literally, I don't. I'm easily amused, but it's hard to like get a startled chuckle out of me. And I was sitting here looking at my computer, flipping through. I was writing some nonsense, and I saw that tweet, and I just literally laughed out loud. I'm like, oh, it's bad enough that somebody told you that. You don't have to write that down.
Right. You're just encouraging them.
Like, oh. And then Cub fans are getting all excited. Maybe we could sign three of them. Yeah, maybe you could. So the two that are left, both would fit the Cubs, because anybody would. One a lot better than the other are Carlos Correa and Dansby Swanson. Correa, it's interesting, right? Like, everybody just immediately connected him to the Giants when the Giants missed out on Aaron Judge. And they're like, well, they got all that money. That's what they're going to give it to. And maybe they are. But then all of a sudden, you start hearing, well, maybe the Twins are back in this thing. And that just smelled to me like Scott Boras trying to, like, kick up a, look at all the teams that are still interested in Carlos. Look at this. I mean, if I'm the Cubs, I just call Scott and go, all right, what's it going to take? Let's just do it. But I think they're like, ooh, let somebody else pay all that money. We'll get the other guy.
Yeah.
And say, well, would he make the Cubs better? Yeah, because they're bad. So anybody would make it better. And Dansby Swanson's he's a good player. He's not at the, I don't think, he's not at the level of the other three. And it's an incremental improvement. Now, it would kind of cascade with the Cubs because you would, then you could throw Nick Madrigal in the trade for the catcher then. Sure, that would. Actually, Madrigal does seem like a guy the A's would want. But a little, no pun intended, a small piece of the deal. He's the still guy Bean asked for at the last second when you think you've got the deal done, and he's like, "What about the tiny guy?" You sign Dansby, you move Nico to second. You now you have a Gold Glove caliber second baseman, a Gold Glove caliber shortstop. That's great. You also still have nobody hitting. It was funny. First, it was MLB Network put together when the Cubs signed Cody Bellinger. They showed the projected Cubs lineup.
Right.
And it was just like, oh, God. Oh, my God. You know, it starts off okay. It was like, I think they had Nico and then Seiya. And then they had Ian Happ. And you're like, oh, batting third. And then Bellinger batting cleanup. You're like, oh, things are getting bad. And then you had, they put Matt Mervis in the lineup.
Right. Yeah, all of a sudden, you got that 937 OPS. Yeah.
And then a big asterisk at three levels of the minors.
Right.
I think Yan Gomes was in there, and I don't know. I think they had, I think they had Franmil Reyes playing third. And they had Billy Williams. He was in it.
Marvell wins.
They should call Marvell just in case. So there's that. I try not to watch the show, but I didn't watch it. I listened to it. I was out. It was lunchtime, and I'm like, well, I'm going to listen to MLB Network, see if anything breaks. And what I heard instead was Christopher Russo yelling at Susan Slusser. He's a Giants fan. He's a legacy Giants fan
because
his dad was a New York Giants fan. So Christopher was a San Francisco Giants fan. And he was yelling at her as though she was running the Giants about how if they weren't going to sign him, why did they try?
Yes.
And she's just, you could hear her like, wait a minute, what? He's like, well, if they weren't going to get him, why would they get their fans' hopes up? And she's like, they almost got him. Like, they made a good enough offer to get him. He just decided to play for the Yankees, which they knew all along.
Well, they should have known that was going to happen.
That's exactly what he said. Well, they should have known he was going to stay with the Yankees. And it's one of those things where you just want to throw it back at him. If they didn't try to sign him, how big a fit would you be throwing right now that they didn't even try?
How could you not even try?
I mean, it's the most stupid sports radio argument ever. The, you know, why would you get our hopes up? I just shook my head like, oh, how is this thing on? How is this broadcast anywhere? But
yeah, he's really as big of a doofus as that.
Mostly, I just listen. Every time he's on, I want Milwaukee to do something because I love the way he says Brewers, the Brewers. Yes.
Boy, I have something unkind. I mean, for a guy that talks as much as him, you'd think he would speak better. I mean,
no, and he mangles names, and you'd like to think it's shtick, but it's not shtick. He just gets excited. And
there is a little bit of a shtick, but
that's true. I guess there's probably a little shtick. He's got a little shtick. You know the problem with Chris Russo? He's got a little shtick. But you do have the Giants now sitting there with a big pile of cash. They want to give it to somebody. Won't somebody take our cash?
So they move Correa over to third, or is Brandon Crawford? He seemed to dive a little bit last year in production. Does he go over to second? Who's at second? I don't know. That's not a great fit.
No, it's not. It doesn't. I mean, Crawford, they think Crawford probably has 1 year left in San Francisco, so it would be one of those where. And I wouldn't, if you sign Carlos Correa, that's not the one I'm moving.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I'm sorry, Brandon. I'd play him at, well, that's the beauty of the Giants. He's the only part of their infield they actually have right now. They only have a shortstop. So there's holes all over he could go. Brandon Woods likes to play first, second, or third because they're all right. Open. They did get, they filled an outfield spot with Mitch Haniger.
Yeah.
Which the person most excited about that was Jack Peterson, who now doesn't have to play the outfield at all, which is right. The way he prefers it. And he kind of played left field last year like he didn't want to play outfield at all. The Giants, the team that won 107 games just 2 years ago. And one of the reasons they won it was they were so good at run prevention. Played just abysmal defense last year.
Yeah.
Almost everywhere. Part of it was Brandon Belt's knee fell off and Crawford got hurt, but they had Jock and left, and it was so Haniger will help him a little bit. I mean, he's not exactly a superstar right fielder.
No, but he's been above average by a little bit. And Mike Yastrzemski's a good they're about the same. He's above average outfielder too. So those two guys in the outfield, that's two out of three anyway.
Yaz, who is probably he's probably better off in right. So I'll let the handsome Gabe Kapler worry about that.
He's got a plan.
Gabe was he was doing an interview at the winter meetings. And it was one of those was Alex Pavlovic of NBC Sports Bay Area. And somebody else from NBC Sports Bay Area. And then Gabe. And they're sitting at this, like, very casual seating in the lobby of the hotel. And Gabe, who I'm sure had just finished a 9-hour workout, was sitting there leaning back. And at one point he crossed his legs. And he realized that he had, like, there. I'm sure they weren't, but when like you and I were in college, it would have been Doc Martens boots. That's the style that they were. And they were white, just like completely white, like the most ridiculous things you could possibly have. And you're looking at Gabe and you're like, that looks good. That's fine. He can wear it. But, Gabe can worry about that. But if you're Correa, who last year you kind of got stuck without the music stopped and you didn't have a home and you ended up taking a rather large 1 year check to go freeze your ass off in Minnesota, and I don't think he wants to do that again. Although the Twins let everybody know that he's still on the group chat with all the other players. Oh well, that means he's staying. He's still on the chat. That's fine.
It's quite the bit of evidence there.
Because I think there was a thought, the fit made more sense in the opposite direction, which was instead of if Judge stays in New York, the Giants can just throw this money at Correa. It made more sense the opposite direction. If the Giants had stolen Judge,
right,
that the Yankees would sign Correa. So, the Yankees are off the board. I don't know who the suitors for Carlos are. People just assume it's the Giants because they have money. You'd like to assume it's the Cubs because they have a lot of money available. They might not want to spend it.
The Mariners could
need
use an upgrade at shortstop over JP, not JP.
Crawford.
I forget. JP Crawford, yeah. I haven't heard them linked, but that could be something. And I think that the alternatives aren't that sexy, I mean, Atlanta probably, maybe, but
don't you feel like Atlanta has already they've got most of that team locked up already?
And there's a couple.
They got Albies coming back until he breaks something.
Maybe a starting pitcher, like Rodon. But
I mean, I think the Braves just kind of feel like we'll just start with Vaughn Grissom and we'll see what happens. We'll pivot if we need to. All right, talk myself into it. He's going to have to call the Cubs and beg. That's how it's going to end. He's like, please, just pay me whatever you want. Here, well, I'll do the Andre Dawson. I'll give you the blank contract.
the Cubs would make
just fill it in
sense, but it is cold here, there, like in Minnesota.
But it's not nearly as cold. I mean, it's so much farther south.
I suppose. He doesn't have to hang around in the winter anyway.
That's true. The
Dodgers would be a good place. I don't know what they're spending their money on.
We saw that thing about one of the reasons that the Dodgers may be a little unable to pay right now is if Trevor Bauer's suspension ends up being lifted and they have to pay him.
Okay.
$60 million. 30 some of which would be on next year's payroll, which means if they go out and sign a guy like Correa, they're already would be well into the repeater, and they'd have be another 30 lopped on top of it.
Yeah.
So they're like, maybe we don't want to do that. This Boris really has to miss just being able to go to the Angels at the end of every offseason and go, all right, I got this guy. Could you just give this guy $300 million, Artie? Sure. Sure. No problem. Did you re-up your season tickets right behind the screen? Did you, Scott? Okay, well then, sure. We'll take whatever you got.
Yeah, he doesn't sit there anymore. They've turned that into something else.
Oh, that's too bad. But he used that a couple of times. They pulled the emergency cord and Artie Moreno showed up with a check. That can't happen anymore. I'm sure the Cubs, though, they've decided, no, we're going to save our money because we're gonna pay Shohei next year $600 million for 10 years.
We haven't mentioned the Padres. I mean, they couldn't.
It's like, all right, we'll just take them all. Come on.
They couldn't,
what
they couldn't bring
do we
in,
not have an old shortstop at? Well, okay, right field. Come on. Have another. No, yeah. They'll right. And loading up so much that they'll have to platoon Juan Soto. Juan, I'm sorry, but we can't get you enough at bats. We could play against righties and on Tuesdays. Great. Yeah, somebody did have a graphic that showed all the guys who'd play. Because it was apparently Austin Nola. Must have been a shortstop in the minors at some point. And I know
that's right.
And I know the guy put the graphic together just to do it. They showed all, you know, all eight positions.
Right.
And they had in gold all the guys who used to play shortstop. And right. They got to do catcher. So they had him and Machado and Tatis.
Cronenworth.
Yeah, Cronenworth. And Xander. And the guy who filled in for Tatis.
My son, Kim.
Yes, Kim. So it's was six of them, I think. Six
Gary Templeton.
Six of the eight, yeah. Khalil Green.
Right. It's my favorite shade of green.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking for paint. I went into Lowe's and I asked if they had him. And then I said, do you have Khalil Green? I said, just a second. He said, no, he works on Wednesdays. So we missed out on that. But the Red Sox, does Chaim Bloom know he doesn't still work for the Rays?
Right. He's been conditioned for the small offers. Not average annual value anyway, but still.
So he got there and he had a team that had Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts on it. And now it doesn't have either of those things. And then everybody made fun of I'm going to butcher the guy's name. And I'm saying this not to be mean, just to be accurate. The tiny little Japanese guy that he gave $90 million to. And everybody went, wait a minute, what?
Yes. Masakata.
Masakata.
Yoshida. Masakata Yoshida. Masataka. Yoshida. Masataka Yoshida.
Masataka Yoshida. I like it. I would assign him just to say it. See, it's fun.
Right.
The PA announcer has to be fired up. You could make a meal out of that.
Yes.
Actually, one thing I didn't mention. The guy I feel the worst for, I mean, he had a great week, but the guy I feel really bad for with Wilson Contreras leaving the Cubs is Pat Hughes.
Yeah.
He loved to say Wilson Contreras. And he'll still get to say it, like, 19 days out of the year. But not, right. not 162. I'm sorry. I feel bad for Pat.
Hall of Famer Pat Hughes to you.
Hall of Famer Virgil Patrick Hughes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was genuinely... It's one of those things where it's like, all right, how excited are you going to get for somebody else, you know, being honored? But that was one where when I saw it, I was just genuinely happy for Pat.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I do think he's a great announcer, and he seems like a great guy. I've met him a couple of times. He's a very nice man.
Yeah.
And he had to carry Ron Santo around for...
Oh.
Maybe literally he had to carry Ron Santo around. For a long time. It was funny because he was on... I knew he was going to be on the Score this morning, so I didn't tune in live. I checked their little podcast thing. I listened to... He was on with David Huh, and somebody was filling in for Mully. And it was Ron Coomer talking about Pat, so I wanted to tune in and hear what Coomer said about it. And they were talking about... I said, well, you under... You know, Coom, you had a tough job. You came in. You filled in for a legend. You replaced a legend on Cubs radio broadcast, and I thought, you guys thought Keith Moreland was that good? It's like, you know, guys, Keith did 3 years in between the Rons. It's not like Moreland filled in for half a season.
Right.
He did 3 full years. Ron Coomer did not replace Ron Santo. He was the next right. Ron, but he wasn't the next he wasn't the next analyst. And they talked about that for like 10 minutes. I'm like, all right, guys.
Your narrative's off a little.
It's not a thing. So you mentioned that the Mariners could upgrade at shortstop. I thought they made an excellent trade before the winter meetings even started when they got Teoscar Hernandez from the Blue Jays.
That's an underrated move.
I really like Teoscar Hernandez.
He's turned into a really good hitter. You're right.
So there was that. So we talk about all the big money people throw around, but were there any kind of off the radar signings that you thought, ooh, that's a good move?
I mean, it's kind of a baseball nerdy thing, but before they signed Kenley Jansen and gave away Xander Bogaerts, the Red Sox brought in a former Cub right-hander, why am I blanking on his name? You know who I'm talking about. He's 37 years old. Chris Martin.
From Coldplay. Yep.
Martin is, it was late in his career, but he's turned into consistently just an outstanding relief pitcher. He walks like 5 guys a year and strikes people out at the same time. It's kind of weird. It's how good he is and good ground ball pitcher as well. I thought that was a really good move. The Red Sox, you know, we make fun of Chaim Bloom for not knowing that Xander was going to need, you know, $200 or $300 million. But he's done some nice things with the bullpen. The Red Sox had a pretty bad bullpen last year, but they've got some good pieces. And I don't know how the starting staff is going to work. And, you know, they have a couple holes in the lineup. And I think they're going to lose J.D. Martinez. I don't know if they have a plan for that part, but
maybe Franmil Reyes.
Sure,
he's available.
That would work for somebody.
Although I think he had a super secret deal already worked out with the Cubs. He said to wait till after the Rule 5 so they could put him back on the 40 man and not actually probably a minor league. You probably get a minor league deal.
Right. But I like moves like that. It's he's underrated, really, really good pitcher. You know, David Robertson signed with the Mets today. He's kind of, I mean, they're not the same kind of pitcher, but exactly. But it's kind of hard to find a good relief pitcher who doesn't have those valleys where they just fall off the map. And those guys are really underrated to me and good players to have on the roster. So I like that, that Chris Martin move. And I can make some good Coldplay or bad Coldplay puns and Gwyneth Paltrow references too. So,
which is always fun. I like the Guardians signing Josh Bell.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good move. I think it's just a good fit in that lineup.
For sure. He had a very strange year. Yeah. He was having one of his best seasons. And then when he came over, you know, people talked about how Juan Soto had a hard time getting started with the Padres. I mean, Josh Bell was
bad.
Yeah, it was Cody Bellinger, Jason Hayward kind of bad. It was just I don't know exactly what his deal was, but and it was he's a switch hitter, and I always, I mean, it's something I don't know about, but when a hitter struggles and you're a switch hitter, you got to like figure out two different completely different kind of swings to get yourself right. It just seems like a lot of work. I don't know. That isn't necessarily worth it. But man, he was bad last year, but he's had a really good career, and that seems like a move that is pretty obvious. I mean, they, for all the things that the guards did right last year, they needed some more sticks in the middle of the lineup, and he's a good run producing guy to go with Jose Ramirez. So I like that move too.
Yeah, in 103 games with the Nationals, he hit .301, .384, .493 with 14 overs, 57 RBIs. 53 games with the Padres, .192, .316. He slugged .271 for the Padres.
I don't know how you do. I mean, is that the Marine layer? I don't know what's going on in San Diego, but
in 210 plate appearances, 3 homers and 5 doubles. That was it. Yikes.
We saw Soto pick it up in the postseason, and Soto wasn't that bad during the regular season, but I don't know if he was trying too hard. I mean, I think that can be a thing sometimes, even with the professional athletes, that they put too much pressure on themselves. Maybe there's kind of secret injury. I don't know, but assuming that is just an aberration, you know, he's going to make Cleveland better.
And then a guy who the Mets decided to keep. They re-signed Brandon Nimmo, who was kind of like the solution for every team who's like, well, we need a guy who gets on base. We need a guy who plays center field.
Right.
How about Brandon Nimmo? And so many teams said, hey, how about Brandon Nimmo, that he got an 8-year, $162 million deal with the Mets.
Yeah, I looked at, and he's kind of sneaky good. He's a couple of years or last year he played in about 150 games. He doesn't do that much. He does get hurt a lot, has gotten hurt a lot. That's kind of always been the big if with Brandon Nimmo, missing because of some serious injuries. But he's coming off a healthy season. And, you know, if you look at his stats, his WAR, since he came into the league, I think there have been 10 outfielders who only 10 who are better than him, you know, since 2016 or 17 when he became a regular player. You know, he's been worth about as much as Ronald Acuna and Chris Bryant, which I know there's a joke in there somewhere, but that's probably going to surprise some people. So, I mean, he puts up, he's probably a neutral center fielder and maybe a little better at the corners. Not sure about his arm. He's good left fielder for sure, and a decent center fielder, and a good player to have hitting first or second in the lineup. You know, he doesn't steal bases, but he gets on and works the count and all that. So he's, you know, he's certainly well paid, but he's a good player.
Yeah, his OPS is since 2018, 886, 783, 888, 838, 800. Now, the only issue there is that in 2019, he only played in 69 games. 2020, he played in 55, but there were only 60, so that was full season.
Right.
But 92 in 2021. So I guess you could say if you look into the Mets training room, you're going to be finding Nimmo.
No.
Huh? Send that one to Boris. Is he a Boris client? Somebody send that pun to Boris. He would love it.
Oh, probably.
Oh, God, he thinks it's the greatest thing ever. That's going to be the title of the podcast, Finding Nimmo. Yeah. I'm sure nobody's ever used that pun before.
You're ahead of the curve there.
Wayne Randazzo is like, I've said that 1,000 times.
Yeah, we know.
I know, Wayne. Finding Nemo. That was great. It was nice, though, to have the winter meetings actually be the winter meetings again. People were there. Right. We got the awkward lobby shots of, sports writers kind of lumbering in the background. And then, like, it's almost like you turn the light on and there's a cockroach. And it, like, quickly tries to skitter. You know, it's one of those. You turn it on and Gordon Whitmire's beady eyes look at the camera. And then he's, like, just a half trot to get out of camera range. That was fun. And there were a lot of moves. You know, for the last few years until last year when nothing happened because they locked everybody out, most of the stuff wasn't happening until almost February.
Right.
It was just boring.
It is nice, and, we've talked about, and other people have mentioned, the weirdness of 2020 and how it might have affected players last year, and even with the lockout, it wasn't a normal offseason, so it's nice to have the offseason stuff normal again, and I think maybe that means that the regular season will be a little more in line with what we're used to once they start that. So it's nice to not have a lockout, or I mean, with COVID, maybe we're just kind of pretending it isn't there. But I guess it's nice to not have to worry about that either, in a way. So no matter how many people die,
the Astros don't have a general manager. And don't seem to be in any kind of hurry to get one.
Right.
Who's doing things there? Do we know? Is it Dusty?
I don't know. I know. Jim Crane? I can't imagine that it's the owner. But baseball teams, you know.
Yeah, there's a million guys.
There's guys, It's
and ladies.
You just sort of right. Although they also fired his top assistant, I believe, when he got let go. So they had to go down the rungs a little bit to find a couple people. But
one of the janitors running the.
I don't know if it was that many rungs, but something like that. So.
And it was
there's a team probably where Carlos Correa will not go back.
Yes, probably not.
Right.
The Blue Jays announced that Don Mattingly was going to be their bench coach. And my reaction was, oh, that's right. He's not managing the Marlins anymore. Who is? And then I remembered it was the great Skip Schumacher.
Did you see that Hayward got invited to the Dodgers?
He did. And so there were people like, hey, look at this. It basically, the Cubs traded Jason Hayward to the Dodgers. For Cody Bellinger. It's like, yeah, that's a great trade. They get to pay both of them. So, nice job.
One of the guys running the Astros, you asked, his name's Bill Farkas. Like
Scott Farkas.
And he was the senior director of baseball strategy, which I have to admit sounds like a really cool job.
It does.
So he's one of the guys, and someone else named Andrew Ball. Well, I don't know.
Oh, Ball.
They run the day-to-day stuff. But, right. I mean, if you're going to Ball, go with, yes, Andrew. But figure that Jim Crane is signing the checks. I mean, that's not any different. You know, we give the GMs credit, but it's, Steve Cohen is okaying all these expenditures for the Mets. It's his decision. You know, it's the Orioles, going out on a limb and spending $10 million for Kyle Gibson, that's what's the name of the Orioles owner? Not Bezos. That's the other city in Washington. Peter Angelos, the Angelos family. They're fighting over who runs the Orioles. So. The Orioles go out and they spent $10 million on Kyle Gibson, and that's going to have to satiate their fans for this winter, I'm afraid. But it's the ownership that approves all the money anyway. So even when we talk about, James Click is gone and his assistant's gone, there's still, I don't want to call them flunkies, but there's guys who will do what the owner says. And, hey, I think we should sign this guy. And Jim Crane's like, yeah, that sounds good to me too. So it's an owner's game.
When he's not he's not denying trades for Wilson Contreras at the trade deadline.
Right.
That's what he's doing.
Or committing some kind of federal racial hiring violations.
Well, you mentioned Bill Farkas is Scott Farkas's uncle.
Somehow, as far as we know.
I was asking you before we went on if you had seen the Christmas Story sequel, A Christmas Story Christmas, which is now streaming on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And you indicated that you had seen it.
I had seen it.
So I was going to ask you, what did you think?
I don't know if I was pleasantly surprised. I was pleasantly relieved that the people who made it, I thought, obviously cared about the original Christmas Story. And now, you know, with everybody on the internet wanting to give their opinion, I see all kinds of, oh, that's a terrible Christmas movie and it's overrated and all that and whatever. You know, I enjoyed it. I hold it dear to my heart, and I think that the filmmakers felt the same way. It was a nice sort of continuity of Ralphie struggling to be a writer, you know, as he was in the original, and you know, it set the right tone. It was funny, you know. I don't think it was anywhere near as iconic as the first, but I think they were trying to make a solid sequel and not embarrass themselves or the franchise, and because they've made some other, you know, A Christmas Story 2 with they've made sequels before, but
they made a summer movie.
Yeah, A Summer Story, I believe.
A Summer Story with Charles Grodin.
Charles Grodin. And that actually was all right.
Yeah, and it actually was kind of funny. You got to spend a lot of quality time with the Bumpuses in that one.
Yes.
And there is a Bumpus in Christmas Story Christmas.
Right.
You only get to meet the one son.
Right.
I enjoyed it. The original is one of my all-time favorite movies, not just a Christmas movie. I just think it's a really funny movie. And I didn't go in thinking this one was going to be as good, and it wasn't, but I did enjoy it. I thought it was good. So Peter Billingsley is back as grown-up Ralphie with sideburns. And his wife in the movie is Erin Hayes, who has been on lots of stuff and is always funny. So that was good.
Right.
Good casting there for her. Was it Melinda Dillon? Was that who played the mom in the original? Asked her if she wanted to be in it, and she basically said, "No, I don't act." And they replaced her with Julie Haggerty, who I thought was a inspired choice as the mom.
Really good choice if you can't get Melinda Dillon.
Right.
I think he's 83 and hasn't acted in 8 or 9 years, so that's cool.
And I love the scene where Ralphie's mom, they go to Vegas and she loses the nest egg. No, wait, that wasn't that movie. That was Albert Brooks.
I wasn't expecting a Lost in America reference, but I should have known with Julie Haggerty. So,
Randy, who, of course, the urban myth about the actor who played Randy was that he became a porn star. I don't know if that's true, but he's in it. And we don't see, there's no naked Randy in A Christmas Story Christmas. So I hate to disappoint anybody who was tuning in just to see that, but you don't see that. The guys
who... something of a Vegas, was it Vegas? Some kind of recluse millionaire type, I don't know.
He was overseas, right? He was in like Monaco or some...
Maybe, yeah, that's right.
The guys who played Flick and Schwartz were back, which I enjoyed that they were both. Which one of them owned the tavern? Schwartz?
Flick owned it.
He got it from his dad.
Right.
But then, the moment, I don't want to spoil this for anybody, but I'm going to anyway, I don't care. I won't say when it happens, but the way that they did occasional flashbacks to the original footage from the original movie. And then Darren McGavin, spoiler alert, Darren McGavin's dead. He's been dead for a long time. And the whole plot around the movie is that the old man dies right before Christmas. Ralphie and the family are about to go to the fictionalized version of Hammond, Indiana, wherever they lived. And Ralphie gets a call that dad's dead, but mom still wants him to come for Christmas. So there are some, you do hear Darren McGavin a few times when Ralphie is remembering things that happened. But the best use of the flashbacks I thought they did was when all of a sudden you see Scott Farkas from the original, and then it morphs seamlessly into grown-up Scott Farkas, who looks exactly the same.
He does.
His face, he made the face perfectly.
Yes.
And I was like, holy crap. I thought that was very well done.
There was a little bit of it that I missed. Did we see grown-up Grover Dill, too? For a second, I thought maybe
yes,
we did.
I think we did.
Toadie, yeah.
Toadie.
I thought that was a nice touch too. Those little details matter. It's yeah. I think it was. It was made with love, and that sort of showed through. And I liked that. I liked that Scott Farkas became a cop. I thought that was really appropriate. And. Not to give too much away, but he sort of saves the day a little bit. So yeah. I guess I just gave it away. But
you did. Way to go! I ruined it for everybody. So Peter Billingsley is the narrator, in addition to being the lead. And it took me a minute to remember Ralphie narrates A Christmas Story,
right?
Because it's Gene Shepard. It's the guy who actually wrote the short stories that they made A Christmas Story out of,
right?
And there is a reference to him, one of his books of short stories, which maybe even the original Christmas Story is in. It was a book called In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. And that's a sign above the bar. You see that?
Right.
Think about they're haggling over Schwartz's tab.
Right.
And there's, you do get all the hits. There's a triple dog dare. There's all kinds of stuff. But at the very end, they morph Ralphie's narration into... He finishes it with the final words from the original Christmas Story, and you get to hear Gene Shepard's voice, because it just they morph Ralphie into that. I just thought it was... Like I said, they played all the hits, for better and worse, but I thought it was pretty good. I was expecting... I thought there was a chance I would turn it on, and about 20 minutes in, I'd be like, I'm going to watch something else. But I plowed through the whole thing, so I would recommend it as a holiday movie for people to.
On a related note, it's a little closer for me because I'm in the Kansas City area, but my wife likes the movie too. There's a town south of Oklahoma City where they have put up a permanent 50-foot replica of the lamp.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, you should read about this. It's in Chickasaw, Oklahoma, maybe about half an hour south of Oklahoma City, and it's all that's going on in this town. It's kind of a funny backstory because, and we drove 5 hours, basically just to see this, and it's really well made. It's about a 40-foot lamp with a 10-foot crate that is also a replica. It's just fragile. It's this end up. It's like what Darren McGavin got. Delivered.
Fragile. And it must be Italian.
It must be Italian. And it's really well made. They had a blow up one, which is kind of kinky sounding, that kept getting torn to shreds by the wind. You know, it's Oklahoma. It's Tornado Alley. So somebody built they took donations or whatever, and they built this lamp, and they're trying to revitalize the downtown with it. So like in every window of every store, there's Ralphie in his bunny feet costume that his aunt made, and they're really milking it, and it's neat because either a resident of the town or somebody who grew up there grew up to be a an art teacher, I think, an art professor at Oklahoma State, which isn't that far away, and has believed all these years to be to have the inspiration for the original lamp. He had made a lamp that, you know, it looked like, I've seen it, and it looks like the lamp in the movie, but it kind of looks like, do you remember the Herbie Hancock's Rocket video with the mannequins and stuff? It was like a, it was a two-legged mannequin with a dress, and it was a lamp, and it was, it's really weird. And I think it's a bunch of coincidences. I don't know that it actually is the reason that there was this kind of lamp in the movie, because there's like Gene Shepard has talked about how something else had inspired it, but this guy is under the, was under the impression, he just died. This guy was under the impression that his lamp that he kept in his office at Oklahoma State was the inspiration. It's like, you know, there was this guy who used to come around my office and was fascinated by the lamp. And that guy went on to work on A Christmas Story in the art department. And so he was kind of putting two and two together. And, you know, people knew about this, but then it was like in his obituary, it's like, you know, Chickasaw resident, blah, blah, blah. It mentions A Christmas Story and the lamp story prominently. And so they're like, hey, let's, you know, honor this guy's memory and try and get a good gimmick for tourists by putting this 50-foot lamp in downtown Chickasaw, Oklahoma, where otherwise, you know, who would think to put it there? So it was a driving distance for us, about 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, if you're not doing anything and you're within the sound of my voice, it's a bit out of the way and odd, but certainly worth it, and especially if you like A Christmas Story. So
the original Christmas Story was filmed in Ohio.
Yeah.
And for the longest time you could go like tour the house, I guess.
Right.
This one, as you would expect, was filmed in Bulgaria.
Right. So another reason probably
they asked Peter Billingsley why it was in Bulgaria, and they said they basically went and they built, there is a shot of like the street on both sides. They built 10 houses in Bulgaria. He said it was just easier to go someplace where we could build the houses to make them look right for the period than trying to find the houses. So everybody got to spend some quality time last winter in beautiful Bulgaria making A Christmas Story Christmas.
That's a Balkan state, isn't it? Yeah. Or is that Albania? Or is it both? I don't know. I think it was behind the Iron Curtain at one time. Bulgaria? Sounds like it.
Bulgaria. All right. Well, I guess that's, I guess, two recommendations then for Christmas Story Christmas.
Thumbs up.
That was good. All right. So we broke down the winter meetings and a holiday movie sequel. So, I mean, what more could people want?
I hope nothing, because I got to go.
All right. Well, me too. Well, thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Thanks, Andy.
Many of us have herpes.
I just wanted this to be over.